Okay, we are
terrific.
Ready to go.
We're good to go. Well, welcome everybody. My name is Tricia Griffin Carty, and I am the Vice Chair on the Storytelling and Organizations, which is part of National Storytelling Network. And this is one of our pretty much monthly story calls, Story Labs, and we're so excited this evening to have Lanny Peterson with us, who's going to talk to us about From Thin to Thick, Expanding Your Organizational Story. I'm hoping that you saw Lanny's bio, but a quick recap, she is a psychologist, executive coach, and professional storyteller. She's really well known in storytelling circles, and if you haven't had a chance to check out her website or look at her Forbes article, I suggest that you do that. It's great stuff. I have actually attended one of Lanny's sessions on this topic back at the Kansas City July something conference this past year, and was really intrigued by these thin, thick stories. It's a phrase that has just stayed with me. In addition to attending her workshop, I've just been really struck by how Lanny moves so smoothly and seamlessly from the role of facilitator to that of a performing artist. She presented at the national conference and told a story that had everybody in the group literally just waiting for the next word. So tonight, she's going to share with us some of her experiences. And Lanny, I'll leave it to you to talk about how you want to do this and how when you want our input and all of the above. So I'll say with nothing else, Lanny, welcome, and why don't you take it from here?
Okay, Tricia, thank you. As Tricia said, she attended a workshop that I did at the National Conference last summer, and it was actually within the healing story track. So I was wearing my psychologist hat and talking about when one is stuck in a thin story, how does one help that person get unstuck and stretch their story into a thick story? And Tricia called me, I guess, a little over a month ago, and she said, do you use this work in organizations? And I said, you know, I do use it when I have my executive coaching hat on a lot. But I think I have not used it so much when I've been looking at more the larger organization and have my consulting hat on. But I think the model could be really helpful. So she said, well, will you present and talk about it? And I said, I will, as long as I can use the Story Lab as a real lab. So what I'd like to do is present to you the work that I've done with this concept in some different arenas, and then perhaps we could all join together in sort of a brainstorming session once you understand a little bit more about the concept and talk about how applications that you might see within a larger organizational setting, because I would like to learn as much from you tonight as you all learn from me. So that's, I think, my way of also making sure you listen really carefully to the first half, because I'm going to be calling on you in the second half to join me. So as Tricia said, I have really three hats that I wear, and they're all very much interconnected, and I switch them frequently, sometimes even in a moment with the same client. But my first hat, and probably my oldest hat, is as a psychologist. So I've been a psychologist now for about 25 years, and in the last 10 years I've had a distinct focus in narrative therapy. And I moved into that focus because of my work as a storyteller and using therapeutic storytelling and story healing, really wanted to understand what narrative therapy could share with me about this. But some of the concepts that I'm going to be sharing with you in this next half hour or so come out of the narrative therapy field. And I'll let you know, this whole idea of thin story and thick story is right out of that. And I've been adapting it and sort of shaping it for my use in these other areas. So then as an executive coach, I take many different sort of stances in that. I work one-on-one with individuals, often with a focus on presence and influence, working on what's their leadership story, and how do they grow into that, what's their vision story, where do they want to go with that. And I also do a lot of work with so story is a change agent, helping people look at the places where their story is thin and not holding them. I call that a constraining story. When is your story something that's actually holding you back, as opposed to a sustaining story, a story that's large enough to hold all of you and carry you forward? But I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. And then my third part is as a storyteller, story teacher, story midwife, as I like to think of myself, because I don't just perform. I have a deep focus on on helping others find their stories and the stories that they need to be telling. So I have a deep passion for story as a change agent. And at the moment, a good deal of my work is with an organization in the Boston area called City Mission, which has a focus of working towards ending homelessness, which is a huge problem in our city right now. But they really value story as a means, dual focus. One is training homeless people to explore their story and share their story as a means of first doing some of their own healing and working through the self-stigma they carry of their homeless story as a stuck story, and helping shift that to a story that they actually can stand in differently, a story that can carry them forward and that they're willing to share with others. And then the second part of that is the impact on the audience of I did something called Story Exchange for them, of bringing people whose lives have been touched with homelessness to speak around our community within different organizations as a means of advocacy, insight, awareness, so that people who have very thin stories about what it means to be homeless and what who a homeless person might be can expand their story that holds more of the reality and the truth about what it is. So my work has taken me into really interesting places, again, from major organizations to working on the streets and in shelters and everything in between. So that's a little bit more of my background and how I've been using this concept today, and it's going to be fun to now tell you a little bit more about it and more specifically some of the ways that I've adapted this concept to help me in my work. So as a part two, I want to just give you a deeper overview of what thin story is versus thick story, the difference between them and how they come about. So although I am not a neuropsychologist, I'm going to pretend I am a little bit and talk like one, and any of you who know more about this, take yourself off mute and come join me to make sure that I'm getting it correct. But essentially, our brains are wired for story, to listen for story, and to take whatever moments and events are happening for us in our lives and to put them into story. And there's multiple reasons why this happens. If you can envision that everything that happens to us throughout our lifespan is, think of it as like a dot on a white sheet, so that you have millions of dots, because we are living a new experience every moment. And they're individual dots that aren't necessarily connected in any way. What our brain is trained to do is to find patterns, themes, meaning-making arcs, and to tie these individual moments together into a story that makes sense to us, that helps us make sense out of whatever has occurred and be able to archive it, to actually judge it, to decide whether it's a helpful story, a good story, a bad story. We tie emotion to it, and then we use it as a reference for everything else that comes after it. So every experience that comes to us anew gets filtered through every story arc that we have created before, and categorized as this is where it fits, or this makes sense, or it's a story to discard because it doesn't fit into my story structure, doesn't have meaning, doesn't work. And this is happening continuously, constantly in us. So there's a couple of important messages within that. One is that we are constructing our reality continuously by how we tie together events. We're making continuous decisions and choices of what fits together and what doesn't. And what the meaning is in that, what we feel in that, and what that leads us to do or how it leads us to behave. Because we are constructing it, we can also change it. Not only going forward, but actually going back. And we do that continuously. We are always revising our story and, in fact, our history when new information comes in that leads us to realize an old way that we pull together the facts actually doesn't quite fit us anymore. And so we rearrange it, and it becomes a new old story. So we're continually in construction and reconstruction. there's really good news and bad news in that. I think actually more good news than bad, the only bad news I can think of is that there's never really stable ground to stand on to say, this is true. There may be some facts that everyone could agree on, but that's more rare than one would realize, that even when one lives through the same line of facts, the way that they tie them all together into a story is still going to look different. And anyone who has a sibling in a family knows that that's true, that you didn't have the same parents, you didn't have the same upbringing, you didn't have even the same dinner conversation, because we've held on to it differently, made meaning of it differently, stored it differently, because we are indeed different. So a thin story, I should say not all stories are created equal. Some are stronger in our minds, bigger in our minds, have more meaning. I believe the ones that are more prominent because they have more of an emotional punch for us. They're given greater weight. So there are some stories that come immediately to the surface, and there are some stories that you created long ago, and they're buried really deeply. And you're sometimes surprised when something triggers them 20 years later because they were so deeply buried. A thin story is a powerful story that gets deeply embedded in a neural pathway and that we fall into continuously, but it's not necessarily a story that is helpful to us. It's a story that at one point served us, meaning it protected us from something, it steered us away from danger, it informed us about something, and it became deeply embedded because of its powerful message. But it is no longer in our current situation a story that holds the larger context of who we are or what our potential is. And that one of the things that happens when we have a thin, deep story, it becomes a deep line of how we've tied together various events, is that when new stories come in about us, we look for ones that match the deep stories that we have. So if a new story comes in and it doesn't fit, it's apt to be discarded, or a new piece of information or a new fact. We look for what resonates with the defining stories that we hold on to, and anything that doesn't, we let go of. So I'm going to tell you a short personal story that it's not organizationally connected, it's more out of my life, but I think it will really help you understand this concept of thin story and then what we do with it. So this story goes back to when I was 8 years old. It was Christmas Eve, and it was the candlelight service at church, where it's carols and lessons. And I'm all dressed up in my new Christmas dress, velvet, green velvet. I am beaming. I'm sitting between my mom and my dad. My three older siblings are sitting far down the pew because they don't want to be associated with any of us. They're all in adolescence. And I am increasingly getting excited with each new carol we sing because it's getting me closer to going home and opening up presents. Towards the finale of the service, we are singing the hymn that has the long strain of Gloria. It goes on and on forever. And as it grows, I grow and get louder and bigger and put my whole heart and soul to singing this carol. And in that moment, my dad reaches down and just quietly puts his hand over my mouth. I sit down. And actually, when I tell this part of the story, people often laugh, and I think it's an uncomfortable laugh. They're not sure what to do about this moment and to see how I respond. In that moment, what I interpreted was, I'm embarrassing. I'm too loud. I'm too much. It's familiar in my family. I carried most of the energy, and I was an extrovert amidst a lot of introverts, and this was another message of tone it down. This became a very deep, thin story for me, such that when I would get feedback later on in my life, like, you have a lovely voice, you should sing more, that didn't fit this story of, no, I shouldn't, I'm too big, I'm too loud, and so I would discount it and discard that input from others. This story became so deep, it started to generalize for me to other areas, like, I'm not going to take the risk of speaking up in school because I might embarrass myself or embarrass others. So I stopped. I became smaller and smaller as this story became a larger definition for me and got deeper in my own sense of self and identity. It's a thin story because it constrained my behavior. It constrained my my willingness to grow in this area. It constrained my ability to fulfill whatever potential I had to actually freely express myself. I got stuck in this story. And we as humans, what we pay attention to is what grows. And so whenever I got any feedback that actually could reinforce this story, it resonated. It was like, yep, I see it. Any information that came in that actually countered this story, I discarded it. And often the speaker as well, they don't know me. They don't understand me. So as I said before, all stories that we pull in as defining stories serve us in some way. This story at the time was to protect me from the feedback, embarrassment, shame of parents who were criticizing me at this time about how I was behaving. And so it became a story that that I used as a learning story of how I'm supposed to behave in public situations. It wasn't a positive one, it wasn't a helpful one, but it became a prominent story for me and one that I carried for a long time. So thin stories are deep stories, they're stuck stories. In narrative therapy, they used a soup metaphor. Thin stories are consommé. There's a lot of broth, but it's not a lot of sustenance to hold you. In fact, they hold us back. They often involve messages of, I can't, I won't, I'm anxious, I don't know how to do this, I'm scared. Those are sort of underlying thin stories. So thick stories, in the soup metaphor, are chowder. They are stories that sustain us and support us to live larger, more full, more complexity, enable us to move forward in the ways that we desire and support us carrying ourselves forward. It is remarkable how many both thin and thick stories we all carry. Oftentimes, when we are fairly functional, we can we know what our thin stories are, and when we get triggered in them, we get stuck for a moment, and then we can stretch ourselves into a thick story that can carry us forward and move with that. But people more often than not, and I think organizations most often not, at times get stuck in a very thin story that doesn't allow them to be fully who they are. So one of the examples of where I have presented this concept and it flew was doing some story work at UMass Medical School with a group of research doctors who are trying to understand why some minority cultures were hesitant to either come in for medical care or when they did and were given a diagnosis and a prescription by the doctor would not follow through or return. And they were trying to look for ways that they hoped they might reach and change the culture enough that they could provide more services to people who were resistant to that. And they thought that story might have a piece in that. And when we started looking at this idea of thin story, thick story, we got into that several of these patients were carrying a thin story about how this doctor could not help them, did not see them, could not understand them, or was saying things that were counter to a larger, thicker story that they held, and they couldn't find a way to bring the two together. So I'm going to come back to this story again in a little bit about some of the things that we did to help them move forward with this using thicker stories in the work. So how do thin stories evolve? Where do they come from? Well, you got a little idea from the story about what happened to me. Thin stories evolve when there is an impactful story that trumps other stories that we have and sort of takes hold. It often has strong emotional content. It comes from either a strong external voice or event that leads this story to be prominent within us. And then it's reinforced by similar stories that just deepen that story over and over again. And it's because we're looking for those stories, in fact, to reinforce it. That's the terrible irony, is that we're looking for the stories that reinforce it and blocking out the stories that, in fact, could help us heal through it. And at this point, I want you to for a moment, to help with our conversation that's going to come later, is sort of to think through in an organization, when it's a whole organization, what would a thin story look like? How might it get started? How might it keep a larger organization stuck? And let's come back to that in a little bit. So the part three is, so when you're stuck in a thin story, how do you move? How do you change? What's that about? And that's really the heart, I believe, of therapy, of executive coaching, of consulting, that we're working with people who are uncomfortable or unhappy or stuck in a story that's not holding them, that's not allowing them to move where they want to go. So for those of you who are familiar with Annette Simmons and her work, she'll tell you right away that, first of all, you can't fight a story with new facts, that a story trumps facts every time. And so often we try to, when a friend or a client or an organization is stuck in a thin story, we want to present the facts to them of, like, you know, this isn't really true. This doesn't hold water. But if somebody has that story embedded in them and it makes sense and meaning to them, the facts aren't gonna move it. One of the stories I use to illustrate this is comes out of Howard Gardner's book Leading Minds. And for anyone who hasn't been exposed to that book, it's really wonderful because he talks a lot about stories and leadership. And I've learned a lot of my work that I bring into my executive coaching came from some ideas in Howard Gardner's book. But he tells a story of, he's at Harvard, of working with a freshman introductory physical science class and trying to understand how people learn and how sort of change in our concepts occurs. So they gave introductory class, they gave the final exam on the first day. Sounds very cruel, I know, but it was a way of sort of testing their knowledge. And with no surprise, most of the class came out with pretty much a third or fourth grade understanding of the physical sciences, because that's where a lot of us are. It's what we've learned about the physical sciences through our own experience about, like, what gravity is, different forces, and how they work. It's what we've experienced in our life, and we have certain stories that hold that make sense and meaning to us without the more complex concepts. So they had this baseline knowledge of where the students were performing. They taught the semester class where they gave them all the new theories and concepts and structures, gave them the final exam again on the last day of the class, and as one would hope and expect from Harvard freshmen, they did brilliantly well and had, it seemed, embraced all the information that had been given to them over the semester. Gardner didn't leave it there. He came back 4 years later at graduation and retested those who did not go on to major in this subject but took this course only, regave them the final exam one more time, and surprise, they tested at about the fourth grade level. And what Gardner concluded in this is that their stories were so strong that they were able to hold the facts long enough to get through the test at the end of the semester, but they hadn't been able to integrate this information because a lot of it ran counter to the meaningful stories that they had originally held. And his conclusion is, if you want people to advance their concept or their understanding, you need to give them a story that makes more sense. So the same thing is true with how to get someone from a thin story to a thick story. So with my singing, people saying, "Oh no, you sound great. You're good. I like your voice." that was a fact that couldn't trump the powerful story that I had developed making meaning out of my dad's gesture. There are several ways to begin to thicken a story. Within the narrative therapy realm, they call them sort of story stretchers. It's not replacing the thin story, and that was my first misunderstanding. Is I thought if someone's in a thin story, you got to just replace it. You got to get them out of it. But in fact, that's almost impossible to do because that thin story is so deeply embedded. It's always in you. That neural pathway is always there. What you want to do is actually thicken it to tie that thin stories to what they call alternative outcome stories. Other stories that were points on your field of events or moments that ran counter to this experience and try and tie them to this story. So with my singing story as an example, it would be share a moment out of your experience when you actually spoke up and it had a positive impact on either you or another. Can you think of any moments of that? And in fact, I could. Or a moment when you took joy in singing and it went all right. And I could think of those moments. So continually tying alternative outcome moments to this story so that when I fall into this story, I actually have some, I call it like ties or anchors to other stories to help pull me out of this confining story more quickly. To tie it back to the story about UMass Medical School, what they searched for were patients from that community and culture who actually came in and stuck with the doctor and took the treatment and had a positive experience with it. They captured those stories on video and found ways to disseminate them on local cable TV. They had audio clips on the radio. They captured stories in the local neighborhood newspapers that were speaking with, so these would be strong, credible voices for people in the community who are sharing alternative outcome stories as an encouragement if saying, if this is something you're experiencing, it can go differently for you too. And then they started also sharing closed circuit videos in the doctor's office before they let the patient leave. Once a diagnosis was given, let me show you this video of other people who've had your similar experience and what steps they took and what happened for them in that. So they found ways to try and stretch the patient's thin story with alternative outcome stories of people who they could identify with and perhaps allow them to try and take a step to do something differently. So one way is to pull alternative outcome stories from others to get their experience of something that's different. The other is to find those alternative outcome stories within yourself. So what were moments in your own life or career where it went differently, where this thin story actually went a different direction? What happened then? How was it different? How were you able to do it? And continually tie as many of these to it as possible. Too often when someone is trying to create a change, they try to do it all at once, as I said, like to remove the thin story. But it's hard to change either a perspective or a culture with just one intervention. It takes many, many small ones tied to it that can begin to stretch a thin story to a thick story. The other piece is once it begins to stretch is to think what are story sustainers to help this thick story stay in place. So ideas are to think of thick story supports, ways to keep the thick story as present, as widely spread as possible. There's a wonderful technique that comes out of narrative therapy that I've used with in executive coaching frequently. It's called your internal board of directors. And it's an idea of We all have internal voices that are telling us our own stories back to us all the time. It's our critics, our internal critics, that are in fact telling us our thin stories over and over again. So to think who in your life has seen you at your best, who knows you and how you function when you're living in a thick story and can remind you of that, and what are the stories they tell you, and to have them reinforced and their stories reinforced. I was working with a client recently who had a very bad meeting, and he said as soon as he got in the car, all of the critics were in the seats all around him and reaming him out all the way home. And he was getting himself increasingly distraught and spiraling into this thin story of, you know, again, going deeper and deeper of, I shouldn't be doing this work. I'm not good at this work. I can't do it. I really messed up. And he pulled the car over to the side and he said, why am I driving with all these people? And he cleared space in his mind. He metaphorically invited the critics out of the car and opened the door and invited in his board of directors and thought, who do I want in the car with me now? Again, metaphorically, and what are the stories that they would tell me in this moment, and why don't I drive home with them? So it's a lovely method of finding ways to help pull you out of the thin story into a thicker story that to hold you. The last quick story to illustrate how I've done this with my own singing story. Once we have a thin story, it's always in our repertoire. We're always vulnerable to it, no matter how much work we've done or how much we've thickened our story. There'll be certain triggers that lead us to fall into it. I was just a couple of years ago running into church with my husband, my four kids. They were playing the opening hymn, which was Cat Stevens' Morning is Broken. I know all the words. I know the tune. I didn't need to open the hymnal. I just join in, and not even aware that I was singing totally different words from everyone else around me. I was in my element, and I was feeling my joy in singing. And my husband looked at me and just raised his hand with like a question of, what are you doing? And all of a sudden, I was 8 years old again. I was in my childhood church, and the shame was in my cheeks. And I immediately, in falling into the thin story, lost all the work that I had done in the 40 years since that happened. I was ready to throw away my career of being a coach to anyone. I was ready to throw away being a psychologist. I was ready to throw away my marriage, ever public speaking again, in that moment of being so caught in the thin story. The difference was I could take a breath. I know this story, and I know how vulnerable I am to it. I drew in my board of directors around me and reminded myself of all the ways that I have moved beyond that thin story and other alternative outcome stories to hold me. The difference is the first time it happened, it took me about 20 years to get out of the thin story. This day when I fell into it, it took about 10 minutes. And by the time the next hymn was up, I could stand up and open the hymnal and sing again. A little shaky, but I was back in the game. So I have several more stories. I realize I've talked longer than I intended to. I would love to open it up and to hear your reflections and your thoughts and your ideas about how this could be taken out of the individual realm and perhaps placed on the larger organizational realm, and how one might begin to support an organization to make a shift out of a thin story into a thicker story.
Well, so thank thoughts, you, Annie. That was wonderful. Yeah, questions, comments, and again, just if you would say your name first, that would be terrific.
It's
a lot to think about.
Yeah, it's Julian. I just want to say thank you because your story really resonated with me about finding a voice and speaking up.
Sometimes
it's a little to take us right back to where we started. And I used the word committee, too, so I smiled when I was listening to you about saying, okay, who's sitting around the table, and, like, the board of directors is a great way of phrasing it. So thank you.
Yeah. Any other or things that jumped out or that resonated for people or that they could find applicable to the work that they're doing in organizations?
Well, this is Tricia speaking, and I'm thinking of a number of applications, and I'm working with a couple of organizations now. I'm starting with one, and I'm curious to see what story they're currently telling. And I think they're interested in expanding that story. So this is very helpful to me because I think it really is. I guess one of my questions is, where do you start in an organization? You know, someone's called you in and they said, we want to take a look at this or whatever. What would be some good starting points for an organization to begin even to think about expanding or thickening their story?
Yeah. So I was thinking in preparation for this that you begin by listening to what are the stories that are already being told. And the first is is outside in. So many people think the brand is the story that they're telling about themselves, when in fact your brand is really the story that others are telling about you and how they see you. So to be listening to what are the stories that are already being told. The other is, what are the stories that are being told internally? Because that is where you really learn about the culture. I was working with a CEO of a large hospital who shared very little about himself, and he did a yearly leadership retreat, which was 2 days, and he always started it off with an hour-long PowerPoint that was sort of the State of the Union address, and it usually held bad news. And he said, you know, I feel like the top 100 leaders within my organization, you know, they should know me and where I stand, but I don't feel actually close to them. We have these meetings, but I feel like they don't get me. So I suggested that he might start his next leadership retreat with a story that shared a little bit more about his leadership journey to being who he was in this job, and why he was excited about the mission of this hospital, and what led him to be here doing this work. And he looked at me like I was from another planet. And what we finally agreed on was that I did some coaching with him to help him more look at his leadership journey. He was sort of fascinated to look at his own story that he himself hadn't explored, of what were the change points and turning points that all led up to this moment. And he, in fact, was, in his mind, doing that Reconstructionist history, now seeing a very different narrative arc of what led him to this place that he hadn't really put together or explored before. So the agreement was he would have his PowerPoint ready, he would start with a short story and then go into the PowerPoint. Well, what ultimately happened was that he used the whole hour with his story, much to his own surprise. But what really surprised him was the reaction of his leadership team afterwards, coming up and thanking him, saying that they understood so much more. The story shifted. So the first is to listen, what are the stories that are being told? What are the stories that are not being told that need to be? What are the kind of stories we want people telling about us? So it's really listening is the first step, and seeing what's already out there and what's missing. What are the holes? What needs to be told and understood?
That's great, Lainey. Thank you so much. Let's open it back up. Other questions, comments?
Hi, this is Mark. Lainey, thank you very much. I see this being applicable in a number of different areas, especially what you just shared about, you know, the leadership journey. I always ask a leader, you know, especially an executive or senior leader, to think not about their leadership past, but their leadership future. And what's the legacy that they want to leave? And then, you know, what's the story that's going to get them from here to there, so to speak?
Yeah.
And I think there's an application there. I also sit on a few boards for nonprofits, and I could see your work being very instrumental in helping nonprofits be able to tell their story more effectively as well.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, you know, there's times where I think the message gets to be very similar, right? Whether it's homelessness or feeding the hungry or, you know, helping children in foster care, it all boils down to the message is we need more money. Well, that's not the story that they really want to tell. So I think that there's lots of application in changing the story that comes across to the donors.
Absolutely. And as you're talking about your work with executives and their leadership stories, one of the thoughts I wanted to share is through the different story types that there are, and I believe that there are many different ones that are helpful and for depending on what you're trying to achieve in getting to a thicker story. So there's what I call the identity stories, like who we are. There's the founding stories of how we became who we are. There's defining stories of what makes us unique or successful, what we do well. And then there's the vision stories of where are we going and why. But then the leadership stories, I think, tie in all of these together. So how did we get to where we are now, and how are we going to get to where we want to go? And that I think you have to be grounded not only in that future but in the past as well, because that is what reveals the value formation and the identity formation that that led you to this place. I think also in doing the story work with executives, it often will reveal where the thin stories are and to expose those so that they can not sabotage your work. Because I think when we're not aware of what our thin stories are, we're stuck in them without even knowing it. And that's true whether it's an individual or an organization. And that it's by knowing them that we're empowered then to thicken them and move forward.
Thank you, Lenny. Again, a lot to think about. I'm just checking our time and want to make sure if there's another question or two out there that we get to it. So if we have a few more moments, any other questions or comments?
Hi, this is Alice. Dan came in about halfway through and I didn't want to interrupt, but I want to say hello. And thank you for the portion that I just got to hear, and I'm eager to hear the rest of it in the recorded version. And hello, colleagues. You've all been so helpful to me over the past several months. And I'm going to ask a couple questions. If you have already addressed them, you don't need to address them again. I'll go back and listen. But I just came from a workshop that I did today. It's part of a four-part series. It's the third one in this storytelling for an organization with a leadership team at a large corporation. Medical Instruments Corporation. And one of the questions that came up was about time when you have to deliver bad news, challenging news, but you want to ultimately lead to know that either we're delivering bad news or things are going to be okay in the end. Do you have any thoughts in terms of timing for that, if you're having to give a presentation or a one-on-one, in terms of would you put something in the beginning before you go into the story that alerts them about basically the punchline, or do you have any thoughts on that in terms of kind of time and timing and sequencing?
So is this news that's going to the whole organization?
It may be just going to their team.
Just to the team, and is it something that's going to be done in person then with the group as well?
It would be done in person. They also might want, you know, it may be that they're giving it might be that they're speaking to 75 people. It may be that they're speaking to just in the room.
Yeah. I'm going to ask these questions because, as you know, that there's the teller, there's the story, and the audience, and that with emotional intelligence, you're holding all three. And thinking, how do I hold them in balance such that as the one who's introducing the story to the audience, I'm doing it in a way that is most respectful, using all my emotional intelligence in that experience. The other thing to anticipate is, what does the audience know already? What do they anticipate and expect? If this news is coming like out of left field altogether, I think you set it up differently than if everyone's coming into the room because they know there's bad news. And how you hold them and how you respect them in that news will vary depending on what you think they already know or what story they're already bringing into the room. So some I think thoughtful questioning of the storyteller about what they already know about their audience and the audience's relationship to the material that is in the story before they even begin is helpful for how it's set up.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way there's not one clean, clear answer. It's all going to depend on the situation and being respectful to the listener and what they're both expecting to hear, and need to hear, which are often two different things.
Right, of course. And of course, there's sometimes where the what they want to avoid is for people to immediately shut down once they, you know, if they put the bad news in the beginning, people might not be able to hear anything else afterwards. So, you know, not to try to trickle, but to be aware of
that. You know, with any story, there's a beginning, middle, and end, and sometimes you you begin with the end. If the end is we have a plan in place, and this is how we're going to take care of you, and now let's tell you, you know, there's good news and bad news. And so you create a holding environment that can hold the difficult news. I'm thinking of my work that one of the parts that you missed, Alice, in the beginning is I do a lot of work with homeless, and they're often carrying trauma stories. And if you work with them in a way that you go right for the difficult story, or in teaching them to tell their stories, they load the difficult story up front, you're right, it can shut down either the teller or the listener, depending on who's vulnerable in this. So I think of creating the difficult part is held between something that grounds you and is an anchor. And that's often something that are stories that you already know about who we are and how we're strong and what we're about. And then there's also a vision or future piece that's on the other side of this story that can carry one to the other side. So you have that piece in place as well. And then when you have the past and the future in some ways held, you can hold the present story in a different kind of way. Uh-huh. So I don't know if that's helpful to you, but I think people need to know that this present bad news, the story doesn't end with this, and that there's more to it, so that they don't leave the room with this ending, especially if one is aware of some future pieces that could hold them differently.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate that.
Some wonderful questions and really thoughtful answers for us all to consider. Again, this is Tricia, and I'm sensitive to the time. I wanted to leave a little time at the end just to do a little bit of a thank you. So is there anyone else who has like a burning question? We could take maybe one more quick one before we end.
I have one quick one. If you have any books, websites, resources that you would recommend for sort of one-on-one personal communication for improving that?
As you were beginning to ask the question, my mind immediately went to books where you could explore more about the thin story, thick story within the narrative therapy realm.
Of course.
So there's an intro to narrative therapy that's by Alice Morgan, I believe, and I can get the exact resource to Mark or Tricia to post on the website. But that it's a short, very concise overview of narrative therapy and what it is, and it might be again too psychologically focused to be helpful, but the concepts of this are in there and can be generalized to the work that you do. But in terms of just general one-on-one communication, boy, the resources I'm sure are huge and immense, and I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Okay.
Well, actually,
thank
Lainey,
you
that's
so much.
Something that's something maybe we can follow up with you and for our website begin to add to some of the resources that are already there. So I can think that could be a good place to kind of explore that a little further. Well, before we close, I would just like to have Mark, who is the chair of the SIG. Mark, would you like to say a couple of words? And also, do we have a preview of coming attractions?
Yes. So, first of all, Lenny, again, on behalf of the entire group, thank you for your time and sharing your wisdom. It's always a pleasure to get one of our own to share with the rest of the group. Some of your perspective and insight, and hopefully you got some perspective from us as well. So we look
forward to
continuing our interaction and engagement, and to echo what Tricia was saying, we would love to get some of those resources put on our website, and so we could follow up with you later. What I think I'll do is also just thank Tricia for helping to coordinate this and facilitating the meeting, but I'm also going to stop the recording, and we can say our goodbyes at that point. So hold on just a moment, please.